Willkommen zu Unruhige Zeiten, dem Podcast vom und für den Mittelstand.
Welcome to the TTE Strategy Podcast. I'm Lars Lindekogel and every few weeks I'm speaking with CEOs, decision makers and entrepreneurs from Germany's Mittelstand champions. We are recording this podcast episode in English because I'm currently traveling the Middle East and this episode is part of a podcast recording series from the region. Family businesses play a major role here in the Middle East, and there's one person here in the GCC countries holding this all together, shaping the path forward with and for family businesses. I'm very grateful for her time. She actively builds a community of family businesses, supports families and their companies in creating a community for trustful exchange and driving prosperity. She's the CEO of the Family Business Council Gulf and a leading voice in the Middle East when it comes to family business. I warmly welcome Sarah Mohammadi to our podcast.
Thank you, Lars, for that very, very generous introduction.
Such a pleasure to have you.
And it's an absolute pleasure for me to be here. We think very highly of the German Mittelstand. And I feel this is a wonderful starting point for a very long-term collaboration between our family business community and the German one.
I think that sounds very exciting. And this is what this podcast episode is for, to create the connection. And I'm hoping that we have a lot of family businesses here in the region, but also in Germany, to listen in and to see what is possible.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Fantastic. We are recording here in Dubai in Emirates Towers. And when we just got together here, you told me an exciting story. Tell me about it. Why is this such a special building? And it is iconic to Dubai, but specifically for you, it has a special meaning.
Absolutely. And, you know, it still lightens my heart every time I walk into the lobby or the towers. So growing up, we would drive along Sheikh Zayed Road going to school in Sharifat, and I would see the Emirates Towers structure being built slowly and steadily. And I turned around to my mom one day and I said, you know what, I'm going to work in that building. And I did that when I was in university. Emirates Towers got finished. And for my first internship, I went to the office lobby and looked at all the companies that are listed. Back in the day, they used to actually put the name of the companies at the lobby. And I would send my resume to the law firms and everyone that was. And eventually, one of the law firms, a partner called me, said, can you please stop sending your resume? What do you want? And this is fax days. This is not email. I was sending it by fax. And so I said, I want an internship. I want to work in your building. And he said, come over for an interview. And so I interviewed and I got the internship. And subsequently, my first job was in this building as well, actually with Dubai Holding. So yes, it's an iconic building, but it's also an incubator. It's an accelerator of ideas and champions. So it's very close to my heart.
It's wonderful. And I'm glad that we can do the recording here
today. Absolutely.
And I'm curious to hear more about you in our section, The Vita.
Die Vita.
Sarah, you are the CEO of the Family Business Council Gulf. How did you become the person you are today? And we just learned that you started your journey here in Emirates Towers with Dubai Holding as an internship. But what happened since then? And how did you become the CEO?
Well, that is a question I ask myself every day, and I pinch myself because I'm very grateful that I get to work every day with some of the most intelligent, generous people in the Gulf. And really, it's a very big blessing, I would say, to and a gift to be able to work with them. And it's all very serendipitous. When I went to university, my original intention was to be an economic diplomat because my internship and my first experience was in a law firm. I learned about trade diplomacy. And so I thought this is a really interesting track to pursue as a career. You know, you get to connect economies, you get to connect businesses. And so that was really the starting point. Then, you know, as every insecure overachiever who doesn't know what to do after two masters, I was like, what should I do? And I joined.
What are your masters in?
Economics and political economy.
Okay. Yeah.
from Tufts University in LSE, and still not knowing exactly how I want to get to economic diplomacy, I joined a management consulting firm, and that led me to Dubai Holding. And in Dubai Holding, I had a wonderful mentor, and he eventually introduced me to FBCG as a candidate. He said, "Listen, there's something really exciting happening." And when I read the job description, I was like, oh, this sounds like an economic diplomat, just packaged differently. And this is around over 10 years ago.
Was that directly for the CEO position?
I actually didn't know what position I'm interviewing. There was only a job description without a title. And I actually thought it was a project manager role. So I went through a series of interviews with the founding families. And when I got the job offer, the title said general manager. And I was a bit surprised.
That seems like a very, very lucky lottery, so to say.
Absolutely. And that's why, I started by saying I feel very grateful because they really entrusted me with a very big responsibility. And it's a very big privilege to have that trust.
And we'll talk about it in a moment, what this basically the scope of the role, what the council is doing and all of that. But I imagine that at the time, you not really knowing what the role is about, and then interviewing with these important families, how did that feel for you? Were you very nervous about that or did you go in?
I was nervous, but I mean, what was amazing was their vision. And their raison d'être. Every time I had the interviews, that's what was very clear. The why and the who was very clear from the outset. And they were also very clear that we're looking for people to come and do the how. And that's a real sign of leadership, right? When you have that clarity of North Star, you have clarity around travel of direction, and you're looking for people to come and make that come true. So that was very exciting. Of course, it can be very intimidating when you're in the presence of very successful, strong personalities, but it's also very inspiring. And I really have to say, our first founding chairman, His Excellency Abdulaziz Al-Qarer, is, and Mr. Omar Al-Fatain, who was the founding vice chairman, were just also very supportive, right? They also realize that we're building something new that never existed in the GCC.
Yeah.
And so they also had this sense of like, let's try, let's err, let's, while having the vision.
And we'll come to that. We have quite a few listeners, next generation, younger family members in Germany. And when I speak with them, sometimes everything that's coming ahead of them seems to be intimidating. And you mentioned the word intimidating, going to these conversations, for example. Do you have any personal tips or tricks for young leaders, next generations, on how to navigate these intimidating moments? Anything personal that you could share?
I think what's worked for me, especially in like growing into this role, has been two things. Always be prepared. Do your homework. When I went into those interviews, I remember I read every report by consulting firms and banks that was on the family business topic, just to understand the lay of the land.
Yeah. Did you also screen all the people and have a profile for yourself? Or how did you do? How did you do that?
Not quite, because the Google search wasn't that advanced over 10
or
years
LinkedIn.
Ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even LinkedIn wasn't that advanced yet. Not everybody was on LinkedIn. So I think now, especially with the new generation, they can aggregate this information very quickly, analyze it, and establish an understanding of what industry they're entering, what conversation they're entering to. But at the same time, I think it's equally important to have humility, because I think being prepared doesn't mean you have to always have all the answers. It's actually having the humility to say, I don't understand this acronym. What is this acronym? Can you tell me a little bit more? And sometimes people tend to just say, oh, yes, and not away, or weigh in with a view where they don't really have the expertise. So I think it's a balance of be informed, be prepared, but at the same time, have the humility to all be curious and say, oh, I don't know that. Can you elaborate a little bit more on it?
Yeah, exactly. And in my experience, taking that little bit of courage in the moment is quite good, because people tend to be very willing to help, right?
And, absolutely.
And to take the next step with you. So, Sarah, thank you very much for these personal insights, the story about Emirates Towers and your journey into the council and your role. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And in the next section, I'm very curious to hear from you what's exciting and maybe worrying in these days as well.
Unruhige Zeiten.
In Europe and especially in Germany, we're going through very turbulent times with economic uncertainty, geopolitical conflicts, rising energy prices over the past years, already supply chain challenges. How do you perceive the current economic situation in the GCC countries?
I think overall in the Gulf, and I speak as an expat, largely living here for over three decades now, we're very fortunate to have remarkable leaders in across all the countries. And you see that reflected in their national economic plans, right? Whether it's the UAE or Dubai or Saudi or Oman, most countries have a grand economic plan clearly communicated to the public. And that creates a sense of collective direction and it creates investor confidence. But it also gives, you know, people living here, whether nationals or expats, this clarity around what are we trying to achieve? Which direction are we traveling to? And I think that's probably maybe a bit different from the sentiment that you explained in Europe. Here, there's positivity, optimism, almost like a collective growth mindset.
And how do they do it? How does this clarity here look like? Could you elaborate a little bit on that or give some examples?
Sure. I mean, I can definitely speak more to Dubai because I'm also living here.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
You know, first of all, there's the clarity about the vision, plan for Dubai, you know, in terms of they want to double the population. They want to increase the foreign investment by a certain amount. And then they also always have these arcs of positive news. So, you know, a few weeks will pass by and they'll announce the expansion of an airport or the launch of a new airport. And then a few weeks will pass by and they'll announce another great project. And they're not always real estate projects, right? Some of them are just initiatives. For example, I remember a couple of months ago, they announced the Green Master Plan project for Dubai. And I was so happy as a mother that, oh, wonderful, they're going to create a more green space for families to go and enjoy. So I think creating this positive news where you're constantly validated that life is great, there is a great silver lining ahead, you're working towards something collectively. And you know, I do really feel that energy in Dubai.
Yeah. You know, sometimes when I'm reading German news or listening to German news or listen to politicians, it feels like there's more bad news than good news. Is that something that exists here as well? If I come here now as a family business, for example, do I also read, let's say, bad news or pessimistic news, or is that never happening here?
No, I think, I mean, things happen. We have, let's say, I wouldn't call it issues, but areas of improvement. But that's exactly it. The framing is very different. For example, when the flooding happened, it was a national disaster, right? People had their houses affected, their cars affected. But the way the whole thing was managed was incredible. Immediately, there was learnings. What does this mean for the insurance sector, right? How are floods going to be treated moving forward? Then there were immediate, you know, protocols around what should property management companies do to restore the communities back to their original way.
So it's really trying to solve it.
Exactly. It's again, it goes back to that kind of growth mindset. And so I think that's probably, and they're very quick to mobilize, right? And that was also evident in COVID, where the rest of the world was struggling with this crisis.
What are top strategic teams these days? So you mentioned the green plan. Then there's a lot around energy. When you walk here in the Emirates Towers Boulevard, of course, there's AI everywhere.
Of course.
Anything else? Or are these the big topics?
I think if we take a step back, the bigger topic is diversifying away from commodities and moving strongly towards a knowledge economy, and building on their geopolitical, geographic strength and their human capital strength. So I think number one, logistics in all its areas. Of course, real estate construction remains a core. AI, and particularly driven by Abu Dhabi. Now, if we talk about the GCC landscape, you have sustainability, particularly with projects like NEOM and others that are making, or Masdar, that are making major investments. And you also have other sectors emerging. I think, you know, again, for example, in Dubai, they've made a lot of strides towards the digital asset regimes and, you know, encouraging a more kind of frontier things in finance, like cryptocurrency, blockchain, etc. So I would say like everything related to finance, but even related overlapping with tech.
Yeah. And when you think about these topics and then match that a little bit with the family business landscape, what are family businesses or the families behind it excited or worried about in that context?
I mean, of course, families in the GCC, we can talk about them holistically, but there are also, but there are differences in within the cities of each country and across the world. But if I were to say common denominators is, you know, rising tides lift all boats. And this region is earmarked for economic growth. And all the factors point towards that. So I think then that optimism and positivity trickles to the families as well.
Is there any sector where we don't have that optimism? Is there any, because of obviously, right, rising tides, all boats floating, but is there any boats that have a small hole maybe in it?
I wouldn't call it a hole, but I think there's definitely more emphasis on pivots. So for example, business models that would focus strictly on being just an intermediary, you know, that like distributors, pure distributors, not with the value add to it, or pure representatives and agents, again, without the value add, because many families have already evolved out of that and they have added layers of value add to
this is where a lot of the roots were in here in the region.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And I think if you look at the ones that have survived and thrived, they went beyond that model already. But those that haven't, you know, especially with disintermediation as a general global trend, you do see that they are, maybe this is probably an area that they are focusing on, pivoting the business model, diversifying their overall businesses.
So what could be concrete strategic moves that they are doing right now?
I think one thing we're probably going to see more of, and there's some starting evidence, is rather than organic growth, a lot of inorganic growth, acquisitions
in
that
the
happens regionally,
or
globally, mm-hmm. and regionally.
Okay.
Strategic investments, not just as, you know, investments through PE funds and VC funds, but actual direct investments, taking controlling stake, making strategic alliances between their current businesses and the ones that they're acquiring. I think that is something that we might see more of.
Okay. But let's talk a little bit later about what they do within the companies as well. So there's a lot of M&A growth, apparently. We discussed previously about relationships when we spoke, and there's one hypothesis that relationships are valued and maintained more here in the GCC than in Germany or Western Europe, for example. So is there any examples where you could illustrate that relationships are really important or more important here than potentially elsewhere?
Nothing really comes to the top of my mind. And relationships are important everywhere. I think it's more about the pace of results. So when perhaps, you know, generally in our region and in the GCC, you will take time to get to know the person you're going to do business with. And while they're also very results driven, as you can see from the outcome and everywhere, every city you go, there is this, let's understand their values. Is it aligned with ours? Because many of these family groups are eponymous. They have their family name on the business. And so the people they associate themselves with has huge reputational impact. And taking that time to understand this partner, their values, does it resonate with yours, is important.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this aspect of taking the time to get to know a partner, also in the context of maybe going beyond the region, is a potential risk for them, that they will not move as fast as they should?
I don't think so. I think in the long term, let's say if they were making decisions faster, let's assume that this is actually delaying their decision process, which it may not. We're making an assumption about that. But let's say it is delaying their decision process. It doesn't mean that the quality of the decision is still not going to be better. I think when you know, because at the end of the day, any damage to your brand and your reputation as a multi-generation business is immeasurable. You can't even quantify that, right? Because names are destroyed overnight. And I think taking time to safeguard that is probably one of the best investments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would be very interesting to look at that, whether this intercultural aspect of how important relationships are, whether that's a little bit disconnected from the region and maybe more relates to family businesses overall. And we could have a conversation with family businesses
Your question, I was going to say, I suspect that also a German family, you know, that is behind a certain brand would probably deliberate a little bit more as well. Again, because family businesses think in generations. They don't just think in quarters or annual results. So they're not pressed for time to show a growth, you know, through an inorganic acquisition. They're there for the long term. And that relationship needs to last for the long term as well.
Yeah. Do you observe any, and last question, then we move to the next section. Do you, in any difference in behavior, depending on the situation the family business is in, how the family values relationships? So, for example, if you have a company that is really on the growth track, looking for M&A opportunities, versus potentially a company that is very much in this trader trap, let's say. Any view there?
That's an excellent question. And I don't know if it's a trader trap, but many of the family businesses are, first of all, most of them are diversified conglomerates. Very likely in this portfolio, they do have agent-distributor relationships. Historically, from a regulatory perspective, these are quite long-term relationships. Even the commercial arrangement is. They're designed to bind them for a long-term commitment. So that, I think, is also part of the reason why they take longer to establish partnerships, because many of these partnerships are around that model. But to your point, when it's maybe for a strategic investment through a PE vehicle or a VC vehicle, the decision-making is different. Because again, it's not visibly putting their name on something that's part of their portfolio. It's a financial investment. But again, you know, and many families, for example, in the region are value-driven investors. They will not invest in tobacco. They will not invest in certain industries that is against their family values. And, you know, again, those things also are important factors.
Okay. No, got it. Okay, let's move to the next section.
The secret sauce.
Sarah, you are the CEO of the Family Business Council, Garth. What is the secret sauce of family businesses here in the region?
That's a great question. I think there's a... There probably is not one secret sauce. There's a couple of things. But if I had to boil it down to one thing, it would be the commitment to being a multi-generation business.
What does that mean?
When you commit to being a multi-generation business, the way you make your business decisions is on a long-term horizon. And the way you invest is a patient capital. And I think you make decisions that is always in the back of your mind answering this question. Will this ensure that this business is sustainable? That when I hand it over to the next generation, I'm handing it over better and stronger? And I think that is, if I had to boil it down, is the most important secret sauce. I'll play it the reverse way. If you're building to exit, the way you build your business and who you build it for is very different.
And is there any specific secret sauce here in the region? How, as a family business in a GCC country, can I be successful in that long-term view?
I think there's a very positive symbiotic relationship between the way the family businesses, GCC based, work with the economic momentum and movements of their countries. they are always aligned. They work with that vision, not against it.
And how is that happening?
I mean, for example, if you look at now, we have real estate projects, right? Many of the investments at the land investments is done by the family businesses. If you look at the real estate construction, you have family owned businesses entering as well, like Shobha and others. So, or Majid Al Fatim, right? So it's they amplify these economic plans. They work with it and they build on it. And I think that is something very unique in our region.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, what's your personal view as a leader and as a CEO about business strategy? Sometimes when I speak with German family Mittelstand companies, they kind of have the strategy in their head. They don't have a formalized strategy plan. They don't have a vision 2030 where we say, okay, this is, we want to be this, this, this. And it's kind of more of a, you know, year on year thing. As long as everything goes well, that's a good strategy. What's your view on strategy in general?
I'm a trained consultant, so my answer is going to be influenced by that as well. I think it's important to have something in writing and very deliberate, especially in a world where so much is changing so fast. I don't think you can leave it to chance.
Do you have any view from your role across your members? How many would have something like that and how many would not?
From a business strategy, our members are quite sophisticated. So they would have something in writing, maybe not publicly available, that articulates what their goals are. And particularly when you talk about strategy, at the end of the day, the other side of that coin is goals and targets that then dictates those, you know, and most of our family businesses in our network are very familiar with this concept of KPIs, goal setting. Again, because it's very much reflecting the national economic culture, right? All these vision programs have goals, KPIs, targets, and there is results that they measure themselves mm-hmm. against.
And can you share with us if there is such a goal or a plan, what's the approach of family businesses here to actually drive these programs in their organization? Is that any way different to large corporations? Is there a family approach to it? Anything that you can talk about that?
I mean, it's again, that varies a bit from country to country. So, for example, in Saudi Arabia, many families have very publicly aligned themselves with Vision 2030. So they have announced PPP projects that support Vision 2030, or they have diversified into sectors like sports and entertainment that were, you know, highlighted sectors within Vision 2030. I think similarly in the UAE as well, you would see that in Abu Dhabi and Dubai.
If we look ahead a little bit, if a German family owning a family business is now wanted to invest here in the Middle East, what would you recommend? What should they do? How should they approach it? In very simple words, what would be a good recipe for them? The secret sauce for coming here?
Find a established, successful family business to partner with. Their local insights of whether it's the B2B or B2C, but also the broader stakeholders, policymakers, those relations, that knowledge and insight is invaluable, and they will save significant amount of learning curve and costs.
And are you a good person to know to make potential connections for that?
This was a purely objective view, by the way. There is one thing I want to say, because you know you were asking me what distinguishes this region a lot, and I mentioned the symbiotic relation. I think you know a lot of. Countries talk about demographic bonus, right? That there's a demographic that is evolving and you can really use that for creating increasing productivity. And I think, and that's probably also been part of why the UAE, for example, made so much progress on the regulatory front, is they don't look at this wealth transfer as a crisis or a risk only. they also look at it as an opportunity. Just like how there's a demographic bonus, they see this as a wealth bonus.
If the younger generation comes in.
Yes, yes, there is. Of course, there's, you know, globally, $124 trillion will change hands from one generation to another by 2048. I mean, this can actually be a big crisis. Value can get destroyed if these family conflicts surface. But the way most of the policies designed here in our region is, this is great. How can we multiply this? How can we make sure this, you know, gets even distributed more and creates more value, et cetera? And I think that is also a very big difference in our region.
Okay, that could
rather than, okay, how can we tax this? How can we generate more, you know, extract more out of it?
Yeah, exactly. You will have many open ears in German family businesses when it comes to how to avoid taxing when it moves to the next generation. Let's move to the next section.
Der menschliche Moment.
The family or the business. It's oftentimes parallel worlds that need to align. What do you observe? Very briefly, how is this process going? And your focus, is it more on the family or more on the business? Or what do you do?
This is I think it's a family by family question. It's an existential question. Is the business there for the family or is the family there for the business? And some find a way to reconcile that. With FVCG, we don't try to answer that question so much, but we say irrespective of which one comes first, there are some basic principles that you can have in place, like good governance, strong family communication, conflict resolution mechanisms for a bad day. And that's the area where we focus.
Mm-hmm. And what would be a good example for a conflict resolution mechanism for a bad day? Because that could be good for any family, I think.
I mean, what we always, as FVCG, have promoted is mediation. Because unfortunately, what happens is people jump the steps and go to litigation. And litigation means you hire lawyers who have incentives to make sure the litigation continues.
Yeah.
And I know to my legal colleagues out there, they are an essential part of the ecosystem, but it's a different incentive structure. But mediation is really important. And I really do wish more families would put that as part of a required step in when a conflict happens.
And nevertheless, in business and also in maybe in this combination of family and business, sometimes tough decisions are needed. Are you someone who likes taking tough decisions, or what's your personal negotiation style?
I try to avoid it as much as I can. But as you said, it's a necessary evil. You have to sometimes exercise a strong hand to ensure a fair process.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, when we think about the generational change here in the region, what is different from the old leaders to the new leaders?
I think it's also a reflection again of how the demographics is evolving in the GCC. Lot more population, lot more international, more cosmopolitan. And you see that in the new generation, they're really opening up. They're really being engaged. They're coming to networking events. They are open to exchanging and learning. They seek it, actually. Whereas with the older generation, or at least the age group of leaders that we used to work with, it was much more selective. In terms of where they would go, what platforms they would associate with, what kind of public presence they would have.
What drives that change? Where does that come from?
With I think part of it, and there's a couple of drivers for this, but I think one of it is the hunger to establish themselves as a separate identity, right? As in like, yes, I'm from this family, wonderful, you know, legacy, but I as myself also have my network. I have my relations. I have my social capital. And I think that's one of the drivers. But the other is also culture. Like overall, globally, you know, the new generation is living on a public life, on social media, et cetera. And I think that also propels them to be more open.
Mm-hmm. And are they allowed to do that? I mean, sometimes when you think about the family values, could be very closed, very confidential. Are they allowed to, let's say, post on LinkedIn?
I think there's a spectrum. So we have, you know, family members of the new generation who are living a very public life, influencers, bloggers. And there's some very popular ones in our region. And then, you know, you can easily find them online. And then there are those that are in the middle. They are there, but they're a little bit more curated. They're a little bit more deliberate about what is in the public versus private life. And then there are the ones that are not so very open. But the spectrum is much more there now than it was in the past.
And if you recommend or work in the educational space with young leaders, are people coming to you also with questions about which decision should I take, what should I do? What do you usually recommend? What's maybe a general approach to family business, next generation leaders? What could you say? You're observing a lot, I assume.
Well, aside from saying listen to your parents, no, just kidding. Look, I think clarity is very important. And to get clarity, you, of course, always have to start with yourself. Who am I? What are my values? What do I stand for? What kind of life? Who do I want to be? Not just what I want, but who do I want to be as a person? I think this is very important. And sometimes we overlook this, right? We're very focused on outcomes. Okay, you're going to be an engineer, and then you're going to go to a startup, and then you're going to build a multi-billion dollar IPO. We rarely talk about who was this person along this journey, which, you know, is a very important question. And we do, character is as important as the company that you're building. And we see this, right, in today's day and age, people with outstanding companies, but not necessarily with great character. I think that that's at the, and in fact, the family is really important. What is the values that the family is instilling? We're only amplifying it. We're giving them the tools to tap into it and to use it towards their strength.
Yeah. In family businesses in Germany, one of the topics that's very important for many families is to take the people in the organization, sometimes even referred to as extended family. I think there's some controversial discussions about whether that's extended family or not, but to take them along in the journey of the company. Yeah? So, and really relates for me to this human aspect of family businesses. What do you observe here in terms of, are there concrete things that families are doing here to engage with their employees, taking them along on the strategic journey?
Absolutely. I mean, look, anecdotally, over the plus 10 years that I've worked with families, I've heard such remarkable stories about how they take care of their employees, you know, whether it's scholarships for their children, providing internal loan facilities for them to buy their first home. So these all aside, you know, I think COVID was, again, a great example, not just in the GCC, by the way, worldwide, because we've looked into this within the Global Family Business Network. They had one of the lowest redundancies. Uh-huh. So I think COVID was a great example of who do you take along when the going gets tough. And then, of course, there are the anecdotals. And another great example that I have is 5 years ago, we launched an award. And one of the award categories was for longstanding family leaders. Till today, it is the highest receiving nomination category in the awards. Like so many, and they self-nominate and families nominate non-family executives that have been with the organization for over 10 years. And every year we get over 40, 50 nominations that say, you know, we're proud of this person. We want to celebrate them. We want to give them an award.
Yeah. And is that also rippling down into the organization, or is that staying on the top management level?
I think it is. It definitely is. I mean, it's part of the, I mean, these are, again, very well-organized corporate structures, so it does trickle down.
Butter by die Fische.
I have a couple of very quick questions for you, and maybe you can answer them very briefly. So, and maybe you can generalize this a bit here. So what's the number one mistake that you observe German business leaders make in the Middle East?
They rush.
Okay, we'll leave it as that on that. One book that changed your perspective about something?
The Last Lecture.
What did it change?
It's by a professor who was terminal and wrote a book outlining how he lived his life until he passed away. It made me appreciate that every day could be your last day and you have to really live life to the fullest. and live your childhood dreams. Be brave. You know, we talked about being brave in the beginning of the interview. Be brave. Live your life in the way your childhood imagination designed it.
That leads me to the next question. What legacy do you hope to leave through your work and your contributions?
I would love that we reach a junction with FBCG that we do not need to exist. That we have created a generation of family groups in the region that are setting such outstanding examples that they're leading, they're trailblazing, they're leading, and we no longer need to be there to facilitate or enable it.
Any leader globally you admire and why?
It goes without saying Sheikh Mohammed.
I asked you what can Germans do wrong coming here, but what is it that they should do? How could they come here and be successful?
I think it's really the German Mittelstand particularly, many of them, and I don't want to generalize, please educate me if I don't have a very in-depth understanding, but they're outstanding at building competitive edge in a very niche, specialized area, right? Particularly manufacturing and industrial. And this is proprietary information. They're great at that. And that's a craft that they know how to also advance every year. I think what they're missing possibly from a European market is that growth, right? And that's one. And the second is maybe in terms of that marketing capability, which many of the GCC families have excelled in because that was their core proposition. They were not the producers, they were the distributors. So they had to understand supply chain, logistics, customer base, right? And because of that, a lot of, and particularly I'm thinking about many of the members in our, for example, community, they have started to invest heavily in this customer analytics, customer data, right? And so you marry those two together, that strong manufacturing and technical industrial base with this ability to be tech savvy, tech adaptive, much more agile, risk taking, and you can have a very interesting combination, right? And I always also challenge the German companies, you know, think about our region not just as a consumer market, like as an end to last mile market, but a place where you can even assemble or produce part of what you're creating right now. Because again, here, it's literally a gateway. You take any GCC country, it's the gateway between East Asia, Southeast Asia, Africa, CIS, right? So we're not talking about only like 55, 60 million population. We're talking about 300 million plus population.
So Sarah, let's make this very concrete. So what kind of German Mittelstand's company could we connect tomorrow to investors or family businesses here to create that joint secret sauce, the German maybe precision engineering, the thinking about the product, the design and all of those things with the go-to-market, tech, AI abilities, distribution possibilities, and potentially also some local value creation here. Who would we now need to find in Germany so that you can connect?
Anyone that is doing something innovative in the EV value chain, you know, from the battery all the way to the cars, but even to the extent of like monitors and interiors, anyone doing anything related to powering AI, so that is data centers, digital assets, digital real estate. And to some extent, anyone that's doing something very innovative in the agricultural space.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Look, we have water scarcity in our region, right? But yet at the same time, food security has become a very important strategic pillar. So families that are, you know, and again, I think Germany does have a fairly established agricultural sector. So people with the tech and the knowledge of addressing this food security challenge, I think have a lot of golden opportunities.
Okay,
here.
So these seem to be three interesting areas. There may be more.
There's many more. I mean, I could talk about healthcare, again, because it's a growing demographic, some very particular health issues within our region. You know, for example, around child diabetes or diabetes in general, cardiovascular issues. So I think, again, in that space, whether it's healthcare services, hospitals, or health tech. I think there's still a lot of opportunities here.
Where can German family business owners, families, or maybe even beyond family business, where can they meet family businesses here?
Other family businesses? Yeah. Well, they can always connect with us, and we can invite them to some of our events and help them get to know our community better. But there are also, you know, obviously German business councils here in our region. Pretty much every city under the chambers have councils, and they work very hard. But more importantly, many of now our GCC countries, whether it's Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia, actually have offices in Europe and particularly in Germany, where they are encouraging and facilitating these business relations. So I think there's a multiple channels and doors that have been opened for German businesses.
Yeah. Are there any family businesses here that look to expand into Europe, into Germany? Any connections the other way?
There are actually, you know, because as I was telling you, one of the trends is this inorganic acquisition, right? And for better or worse, there are a lot of interesting businesses in Europe right now that are going through the generational transition and they're looking at exits. And so whether it's with PE firms or just as full acquisitions, there's interest in, you know, particularly the manufacturing sector. If you think about the fit out, interior decor, furniture, you know, kitchen appliances, like these sort of everything related to construction, real estate value chain. There's quite a bit of interest there. You know, families do their roadshows in Europe looking for opportunities.
But Sarah, what do German companies now need to do? What would be, if you had to advise them, what would be your advice to German, out of the context now of family business here, if you observe that, what is your personal advice to German companies?
I think play on your strength. You are innovative. You are reliable. You're known for your, you know, engineering ingenuity. But put that into practice.
But you're challenging the value now. Huh?
But put that into practice, but also be more flexible. Get to know your market. Be a little bit more, you know, it's like there's the German way. Yes, the German way is amazing. But the world is changing. The demographic is changing. Customer expectations are changing. You know, and I think that the biggest thing, and it's funny because I was saying Germans rush. They rush in their own internal process, but they don't rush when it comes to going to market. And I think that needs to be flipped. Rush less in your internal process, but rush in your going to market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you observe the speed of how things are happening here, also Chinese automakers are bringing out new models.
But and new models, like, and also the way, again, they have their ears on the ground. People want better warranties. They want better value-added service. They want better this. And I think the Germans also have to adapt now to those changing demands.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great connector across borders. Yeah, to bring the style of business, how it's done here, how it's done elsewhere, with German businesses and connect these strengths and create what's best out of all the worlds, you
absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely. The engineering ingenuity and the agility and understanding, having your ear on the ground with the customers.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful combination.
That's a very good takeaway. And if you were not there where you are today, what career would you have imagined or dreamt of early on, or maybe sometimes fantasized about today? Anything you can tell us?
A great question. I think I would have been actually an economic diplomat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to the roots, so to say. Lots of priorities, lots of people that you were engaging. You mentioned you were also just flying in today from a very special event. So tell us a little bit about your priorities in the next days, your calendar, how does it look like, what's on your agenda? And maybe you can also talk a little bit about what you have done the past couple of days.
Right. A very busy month for us, actually. So I just came from Dammam. We had a wonderful event for the women, particularly the ones that are on boards in family businesses. 2 days of social and formal gatherings. The main thing that's going to keep me busy for the next couple of days is we have our legal roundtable. It's a private gathering where the legal counsels from across the GCC in our network will come to meet again or for the first time, but also to talk about the regime changes, right? The league regulatory changes. Mm-hmm. And what does that actually mean for the families?
Is there any big leading question that they would be
looking? There's a few quite interesting ones. So number one, at the GCC level, there is obviously the corporate income tax that's been introduced in the UAE. And what does that mean for families that are using, for example, foundation regimes to structure their estates? There is Oman's introduction of personal income tax, and what that also means for people that are residing in Oman. And then globally, UK non-dom, it's a topic of discussion, and a couple of inheritance tax regime changes in different parts of Europe that will also potentially impact them.
Well, it seems like the tax conversation is a good topic to speak with the Germans as well.
I think we have a lot to learn from them, right?
Yeah. Anything in the next couple of weeks or months you're personally very much looking forward to?
Definitely our annual summit. It's in end of November. We're hosting it in Muscat, the country where our chairman, Hind Sahil Bahwan, is from. Very excited about that. And of course, closing the year on a great high.
Okay, oh, that sounds very exciting. Sarah, thank you so much for your time today. I believe we can take away quite some very special insights about when it comes to family businesses here in the GCC. I'm very impressed by your personal journey. I'm glad that we chose this location for our conversation today. And let's see if we can create some connections between family businesses in Germany and over here. I think there must be opportunities for both sides. And I hope we'll stay in touch. We are actually just opening our first office here in the region in Dubai. So that could be a very good connection point as well. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Sarah. Dear listeners, thank you for joining us today here from the United Arab Emirates. And if you have any comments or questions, suggestions for future episodes, please write us at hello@tte-strategy.com. And the podcast is a format by TTE Strategy, the award-winning strategy and transformation consultancy, recognized multiple times with the Hidden Champions Award. And if you are looking to bring calm and routine into your restless everyday life, tune in again to Unruhige Zeiten.
Unruhige Zeiten.